days is enough. We haven't time for much more anyhow. He glanced around at somber faces. You can all contribute. Keep your eyes open, observe, think, make a note, report. When we come up with a plan, question it, probe it, figure out your own part in it, and rehearse it over and over. And prepare your survival options. Wherever you are, work out where you would go, what you would do, who you would need to help. If the worst came to the worst, practice it over and over. 7 days until we go get that chili. Are we done? Are we all clear? Then let's make a start. As the meeting broke up, Jophiel stood with Nicola. He whispered, "You think I should have said something? Michael should have responded to that challenge. Make it clear that this is his mission as much as Max's." She snorted softly, and quite artificially, a special effect, Jophiel realized. Her nostrils were smooth, inflexible air ducts. What, intervene in the standoff of the two alpha males? This is the moment Max has been waiting for since we left Cold Earth. As for Michael, maybe the only thing worse than not achieving a lifelong goal is achieving it. Michaela's mutiny affected him, I think. Maybe he feels he's lost his way. Yeah. Max, though. For all the tough talk, don't you think he seems brittle? Terrific perception, Nicola said sourly. Remind me again why I followed you losers from Jupiter. Well, at least we know what the plan is. As Max says, let's make a start. So they made their 7-day plan and followed it through. While in the universe beyond the wheel, 96,000 years shivered past. On the 7th day, Max assembled selected seniors, Poole, Jophiel, Nicola, Harris, Asher, Chinello. He preempted the use of one whole truck so they could have some privacy. And he projected a virtual map along one long wall. It had a green cross close to the left-hand end, Jophiel saw, a red cross to the right. Otherwise, it was blank. Max glared around at them. Behold your neighbourhood. A stretch of the deck a bit more than 1 million kilometres long. And it's not to scale, by the way. The section on the chart should be as wide as it is long. Spinward, which we call east, is to the right. Here we are. The green mark to the left. Still close to the Chile wormhole assembly. And over there, and he walked the length of the cabin to make the point, is the Chile. As far as we can tell, right, Asher? She nodded. Confirmed by the drones we dared send up. It has a distinctive signature, gravity waves, for instance. Physically, it is a knot of space-time anomalies. But we have also detected some kind of structure out there. Hull plate with its opacity to neutrinos, that's easy to identify. We sent up some drones and have some long-range visuals. And we see some similarities with the wormhole close by here. A cube, it looks like. And the same colour visually, that soft blue. The same kind of signature in other spectra. Nicola really wasn't so far off when she called that transit system from Deck 3 a wormhole. It is an artifact of folded space-time in part, just like a wormhole, and it emits some of the signatures of a wormhole. Negative energy particle cascades, for instance. Poole grunted. So the Chile has another wormhole over there. She shook her head. We don't think so. Similar engineering may be, but this is bigger, apparently more complex. We think the structure has some other purpose. She grinned. We're calling it the Nest. Not very scientific, I know. Max snapped his fingers, and more detail coalesced on the map between the two locations. Pale circles, mostly, Jophiel saw, with no interior detail. There is some structure between us and the Chile, Max said, which we're probably going to have to see close up to figure out. He pointed to the circular notations on the map. These are like craters, or so they look from afar. Each may be 1,000 kilometers across. Like small cup worlds, maybe. 1,000 kilometers might not sound much, lost against this background, but that's as wide as the Mare Imbrium on the moon. Anyhow, we don't think these circular features are any threat, so we bypass them. Most of them, anyhow.
Bypass? Harris Kemp said. Something you admit we haven't even seen before, and we just ignore them?
Max shrugged. This isn't science we're doing here. This isn't exploration. He pronounced that word as if it was an obscenity. We're trying to achieve a goal, and whatever is irrelevant en route to that goal we can leave aside. But we have to secure our base first. He snapped his fingers again, and a new green mark appeared in the map, some distance to the left of the symbol that marked the human camp. We know the Chile has used our wormhole to get through to Deck 3 and supervise repairs. That's how we got here, correct? So we know it has travelled anti-spinward along this swathe of Deck 1 from its nest as far as this hatch. So now I propose we make our permanent camp in the other direction, further anti-spinward, just in case the Chile comes out of its wormhole again. Jophiel nodded now. That makes sense. Make your base outside its known range. Right. So we load the trucks and send them that away. Away from the Chile, while the rest of us go visit the Chile ourselves.
One chance only, Nicola said. No time to scout, even. It's all or nothing.
She grinned, feral.
I love it.
Jophiel, having thought it over, didn't. Michael, what about backup options? I mean, we only have one flyer. How would we retrieve the crew if... Poole looked uncomfortable too, but he shrugged. This is all we have. Max snapped. Look, is the hand we've been dealt, and at least we have a play. Chinello looked alert, engaged, excited.
We really are going out there, aren't we, Max? Going to face the Chile.
He grinned at her. Well, that is why we came all this way. But Jophiel found the strange blankness of Poole's expression as he took one step nearer to his goal, deeply troubling. Chapter 70. It took them 2 more days to prepare, to finish the stripping down and checking out of the flyer itself, to select and load the gear, 2 days in which the remainder of the crew started the process of moving the trucks and other gear which sustained their lives westward, away from the deck hatch installation and the sullen Chile. There were to be just 6 in the flyer, all that the craft would take comfortably, with their gear and supplies for the 90-day round trip Max had planned for. The 6? Max, of course, expedition leader, Michael Poole, Asher Fennell, never a warrior, but the nearest thing Max had to a source of intelligence on the Chile. Nicola, the pilot. Anticipation for the extraordinary flight shone from her silvered face. Chinello Thomas. Max called her the best fighter of the new generation, and Jophiel agreed it was right that at least one of the shipborn should be present to witness the climax of a saga with roots reaching back all the way to the solar system and cold Earth. A witness for the future, however it turned out. And Jophiel himself, who at least didn't take up any room, he reflected wryly. Michael Poole was the last to scramble aboard, carrying one last item, a box of what looked like bamboo. Jophiel saw this. Nicola missed it. She and Chinello were too caught up in preparing the flyer's systems to pay attention. Nicola said she intended to use the mission to teach Chinello to fly, and she had started that process already. Asher was immersed in her soft screens as usual, as if saying goodbye to her own projects.
But Max noticed the bamboo box and raised a quizzical eyebrow. Jophiel recognised the style of the box, though he didn't know what was inside. Bamboo. From Garlia 3, right? Poole nodded curtly. A gift from Miriam Berg. Keep it to yourself. Garlia 3, a heavily stealthed station in Jovian orbit, had been a key source of intelligence and weaponry for Poole's effort to resist the Chile during its assault on the solar system, and Miriam Berg had been one of Poole's closest allies and colleagues, never quite a lover, so this was significant. And Jophiel thought hard, looked inwards, looked for memories or rather gaps in his memory. I don't know what's in that box. Yet when Miriam handed it over, it was long before I was spun off. I was there, so to speak. Why don't I know what you do? Poole looked embarrassed. Security. In this case, it applies even to you. I apologise. I can imagine how it must feel to know that you've been edited. Jophiel was bemused, furious. You don't trust me. You didn't trust yourself. Poole's expression hardened. It was done when you were spun off. You were being sent over to the Gia, remember? Where it turned out there was a mutiny going on. Have you tinkered with my head any other way? No. I swear. Just this. But I'll never know if that's the truth, will I? You'd have done the same, Poole said bluntly. And Jophiel knew he was probably right. He turned away, conflicted, confused. Well, I hope whatever leaf-spawned thing you have in that box is worth it. So do I. One last round of goodbyes. Another breakup. Just as when they had all climbed down through the wormhole from Deck 3, Jophiel thought. He thought there was a sense of relief once the flyer hatch was finally closed. Nicola touched the controls, lifted the flyer to a height of 50 meters above the smooth hull plate floor, and steadily, cautiously, began the ramp up to full speed. Jophiel strapped into a passenger couch, locked into his consistency protocols, barely felt a touch of acceleration. Once they were out of the clutter of trucks and temporary shelters, the extraordinary sky of the wheel opened up around them. Light curved into a false dawn, an unending sunset. 1,000 kilometres an hour. Sweet as a nut, Nicola said. Well, let's keep it that way, Poole said. No stunts, Nicola, no matter how bored you get. She grinned. Oh, I'm all grown up now, don't worry about that. Let's just hope it stays as smooth and calm all the way to the Chile in 6 weeks' time. Well said. Max pulled his skinsuit hood around his face. Following Max's crew rules, they were all to wear their skinsuits all the time, and settled down in his couch, his legs stretched out before him. Wake me up when there's something to see. He opened one eye and looked over at Chinello. Part of the drill, kid. You sleep when you can, eat when you can. You never know when you'll get the next chance. But Chinello, wide-eyed, looked as if she would never sleep again. Jophiel leaned over to her. Why don't you go out back and get some exercise? There's room in the hold. You can rig up a rower, a treadmill. Chinello seemed reluctant to leave the control cabin, but it was apparent that nothing was going to happen any time soon. You'll call me if... I suspect you'll know all about it, if... She grinned. Okay. Thanks, Jophiel. And Jophiel had the uneasy feeling that Max wasn't asleep at all, despite his performance. As it turned out, there was no if for 4 days. Then, early on the 5th day, more than 100,000 kilometres from the Couchy camp, they found something. It was as if the flyer flew over a cliff edge. Jophiel watched from a side window. The aircraft kept to its course, and he saw a neat hull plate floor far below. He glanced around. Nicola and the rest were staring out at the scenery intent, all save Asher, who was frowning into a soft screen.
Okay, Nicola said. I used pilot's prerogative on how to deal with this. We're flying over one of the teeny circle marks on Max's map, you remember? Craters a mere 1,000 kilometers across, so we should take an hour to cross it. And a few kilometers deep, as you can see. Just like Max said back at camp, it's a feature as big as the largest seas on the moon, but lost in the detail of this deck. We came onto this one roughly along its center line, which is why I decided to fly over it instead of around. There's no sign of danger. If we'd skirted the feature, it would have added half an hour to the journey. And I kept our altitude constant. I could fly down if you feel it's worth inspecting the surface.
Max shook his head. Nothing down there. You can see it. Good choice about the route, Nicola. No evident threat. You have to prioritize. We're not here to explore.
Asher sniffed. Maybe. But we ought to make time for finding out what this is. Otherwise we're flying blind.
It's like a cup world, Cinello said. Don't you think? A lot smaller. They were more like 10,000 or 20,000 kilometers across, I think. With all that detail.
She trailed off, uncertain.
Maybe not so much like it then.
No, I think you're right, Cinello, Asher said. There are similarities. An order of magnitude smaller, yes, no detailed sculpting. But here's one of the things you can't see in a glance, Max. It does have a lid over it, like the force field skies we saw over the true cup worlds. So maybe it is meant as a habitat of some kind, even if it's empty for now.
Other differences, though.
She pointed at a soft screen. That perimeter, the edge we flew over, looks remarkably fragile to me, loosely coupled to the wider wheel structure by remarkably thin strips of hull plate. As if the whole thing, this great bowl, is meant to be detached.
Poole looked baffled.
Detached. And more odd energy signatures, she said. This time of the kind we associated with the Chile when it was in flight. Plain as space-time flaws, like the Chile discontinuity drive.
Propulsion systems.
Poole stared at her. Are you saying this dish has a propulsion system, independent of the wheel?
A disc ship, Jophiel said.
We need to name this, right? Always the first step in managing the unknown. It's a disc, and it's a ship, too, probably.
A disc ship.
He frowned. But I don't recall us observing these features before when we first hit this deck. Before we went off up to the higher decks, I mean.
Asher shook her head.
No, indeed. So maybe this is new. Maybe the wheel is moving to some new configuration, as the end of its 5-million-year mission approaches, always assuming we're right about that.
Maybe it's a lifeboat, Cinello said now.
The disc ship, I mean. A lifeboat for a whole world. I mean, a cup world. If you really had to take off the whole population, if something went badly enough wrong on the wheel.
Nicola laughed.
You think it's crazy?
Cinello said defensively.
No! No, not at all. I think it's a beautiful idea, and just crazy enough to be true.
Max Ward grunted. Maybe so. But if this is a lifeboat, what kind of iceberg is the Chile anticipating up ahead?
As Nicola predicted, it took them an hour to cross the disc ship. They flew on. The days settled into a rhythm of sameness. Max slept an astounding amount of the time. On the 19th day, not yet halfway through the journey, they came upon another disc ship. It was the same size and configuration as the first, but this one was occupied. It brimmed with roiling gas, a somber red tinted with purple and black, a bowl of clouds illuminated from within by immense lightning bolts.
The disk ship seemed to contain a single huge storm 1,000 kilometers wide. Nicola gave this disk ship a cautious wide berth, but Asher gathered data eagerly. "Jupiter cloud tops," Poole murmured. "When I was at Io, I spent many hours staring up at views like that."
"Like a sample," Jophiel said. "Cup worlds are as big as planets. This disk ship is like a piece of a world. Like an ecohab in one of our green ships, like the island."
"You were right, Chinello. A disk ship is a lifeboat." They flew on. In the next hours, days, they observed more disk ships. Mostly empty, but some were bowls of rock and metal, liquid and gas. Asher gathered data assiduously, muttering to herself, sometimes speaking to Harris Kemp and others back at the trucks. When she fell silent at last, some days beyond the Jupiter disk ship, Jophiel prompted her. "Come on, Asher. We know you by now. You have some new, unsettling idea fermenting, don't you?" She looked at him sourly.
"If you want to put it like that. I'm exchanging data with the trucks all the time. The observations are still chancy," she said hesitantly. "It's hard to be sure. I think we're seeing evidence of a wider reconfiguration."
"Of what?"
"Of the wheel. The whole wheel, Michael. We're surveying the wider structure of the wheel as we move through it. With triangulation, we can see some dramatic changes up there on the decks, even the struts. The cup world seemed to be moving."
Jophiel was astonished. It did make sense that the wheel would reconfigure as the end of its 5-million-year mission approached and a new phase began. But it was profoundly unsettling to have this tremendous habitat rebuild itself around them all.
Asher said,
"And when we put it together with what we've learnt of the disk ships..."
She ducked her head and looked out of the flyer, peering up at the galaxy centre sky, as if seeking to see the rest of the wheel up there.
"It's so remote, and on such a large scale, and so slow. It's like tracking the motion of planets. But we think that the cup worlds are sliding along their decks, even descending down the struts. This is all very partial."
"Wow." Chinello sat up. "And I bet the cup worlds are being brought down here to be emptied out."
"Or sampled, at least," Asher said. "Maybe using wormhole links, given the time dilation. It does look that way, doesn't it?
But you couldn't empty a whole world into a lifeboat. How would you choose what to put in?"
Asher spread her hands. "We don't know. We may never know. We're like ants crawling around this mechanism ourselves, Chinello."
Jophiel, stunned, tried to picture it. The wheel like some vast piece of clockwork, with whole worlds or world-sized artifacts being moved around like beads on an abacus. The disc-shaped lifeboats filling up with samples of life. And then...
And then what?
Would the lifeboats be released to go flying off into the dark?
"It's wonderful, though," Chinello said. "Isn't it?"
Max Ward just glowered. "That's one word for it." They crossed over one particularly notable occupied disk ship dimple, 34 days out from the Couchy camp. In this one, tangles of silver rope lay inert across an ice-strewn landscape. In the larger concentration, a tower lifted above the tangle, the jewel-like sculpture at its tip inert. Ghosts again. Asher made her records, there was little discussion. On the 42nd day of the flyer's journey, they arrived at the Chile Nest. Just as Asher's remote sensor results had suggested, it was like an enlarged twin of the wormhole facility on Deck 3,
a blue box floating above the hull plate.
Chapter 71. Ship elapsed time since launch. 28 years, 245 days. Earth date, circa 3,409,000 AD. Nicola set down the flyer perhaps 500 metres from the Chile structure. Ward and Michael Poole prepared to set off for a preliminary scout. Ward checked out his own skin suit briskly, hefted a weapon, a laser rifle, and glared around.
"You've all got plenty to do. Secure the flyer. Prepare for a full raid. Let's keep this simple."
Nicola frowned. "Simple? There's nothing simple about this, Ward, save for your weapon, which won't be a scrap of use against the Chile." But Jophiel saw how Ward glanced at the orange pack on Poole's back. In there, Jophiel knew, was the bamboo box, the gift from Galia 3. So Ward knew something about that. Ward grinned back at Nicola.
"We'll see.
On the other hand, we may achieve something here that probably no other species has managed in 10 million years. 10 billion, for all I know. Strike back at the Chile." He winked at Chinello, who stared at him wide-eyed. "Come on, Poole." Jophiel and Nicola watched them go.
"You're not happy," Jophiel said.
Nicola's expression, always hard to read, was pinched. "I give Max credit. He was a hero of Cold Earth. He was a big figure then. But now we've dragged him across the galaxy and he's... small."
Jophiel shrugged. "But he's all we have."
"True enough. You know, I've never believed in fretting about problems before they turn up. Now look at me. Must be the ghost in me. Or I've spent too much time with you morbid pools. Come on. Let's go and oil our six-shooters like the Marshal said."
After an hour, the scouts returned.
Back in the enclosure of the flyer, pulling open their skin suits, a grim-faced Poole gave a quick summary. "We learned nothing new we didn't get from the drones and the remote survey. We didn't actually touch it or ping it with anything more threatening than a gravity wave probe. The nest looks to be the same kind of mechanism as the wormhole between the decks, a big blue box floating maybe a meter off the floor. There are nested ports in each of the faces we could see, just like the deck hatches. It didn't react to our presence. Seems to be the same kind of hull plate material as Nicola's wormhole, but bigger."
"A lot bigger," Ward said. 200 meters on a side, roughly."
Nicola shrugged. "The next step is obvious. We go inside."
"Not until we're fresh." Ward glared around. "We'll rest for one watch. Get some sleep if you can."
He glanced at Jophiel.
"Those of you without an off switch, anyhow."
Poole nodded curtly. For Jophiel, sleepless, the watch lasted a geological age. At last, they started moving. Inside the flyer, under Ward's guidance, they checked out their gear. Each wore a skin suit and carried a first aid kit. Weapons, from knives up to laser rifles, soft screens in pockets and mounted on their sleeves. For communications, once they were inside a structure that was likely to be opaque even to neutrinos, they would trail cables in from the exterior. And as a backup, in case the cables failed or were cut, Asher had rigged up a backpack containing a minute lump of condensed matter. The lump was not heavy but extremely dense, and when manipulated by electromagnetic fields, it gave off gravity waves, weak but detectable even through Chile hull plate. They even had a short stepladder and lengths of rope for climbing around inside the putative interior of the structure. And Poole hefted his orange backpack containing the bamboo box. As they checked their stuff, Ward gathered them together to talk through his plan of action one last time. If the deck wormhole is a precedent, we're expecting to find multiple chambers within that box. He shook his head. Or beyond, whatever. So we leave a trail as we go. And the comms cable. Also, we have to think about securing a retreat. One person stays outside, and we leave one person in each chamber we encounter until we get to whatever we find. I know that spreads us out, but it gives us cover front and back. Ideally, I'd leave somebody back in the flyer, but there may be too few of us as it is.
We need to keep talking, Poole put in. Describe what you're seeing. Make sketches, maps. We must expect the geometry to be strange. We may be able to piece it together later from our differing perceptions.
Last chance to send a message home, Ward said. Back to the convoy, I mean. We might even get a reply or two before we deploy. Even at this distance, a light-speed signal will only take a few seconds. Chinello stared. She evidently hadn't thought that far.
What kind of message, Max?
Anything you want to say. Put your affairs in order. If you've got anybody you need to apologize to, do it now.
Chinello considered that. What will you be saying?
He grinned. Don't touch my stuff. Obeying one last insistent order from Max, in pairs they checked over each other's skin suits. Then Max took a deep breath. Let's do this. And he pushed open the flyer's airlock door. Once outside, Jophiel looked back at the flyer. Stranded on the clean hull plate floor of the deck, against the smooth red wash of the wheel's western sky, it looked crude, ungainly, primitive. It seemed to take another age to walk the final 500 meters to the chilly structure. Nicola was watchful, even quiet for her. After a few paces, Jophiel leaned over to her. Something on your mind? Her expression was enigmatic, even given the stiffness of her artificial face.
Just looking around. Looking at us.
Max Ward, the gung-ho soldier, as brittle as an over-sharpened blade. A wide-eyed kid. An even more wide-eyed astrophysicist. Me, a miracle of alien technological tinkering. And you, a virtual copy. Quite a comet tale of losers and freaks trailing Michael Poole across a galaxy in 3 million years.
Jophiel smiled.
That's life. Michael's life, anyhow. And it's all we have. So they reached the artifact. Just as advertised, a floating blue box, a big one. The Chilly Nest. The group instinctively gathered closer together. Max glared.
Scatter! Move away, you Chinello, over there, you Nicola. Come on, guys. Basic field craft that I've been drumming into you for a quarter of a century, or trying to. Don't let yourself get put in a position where you could be taken out by one shot.
Nicola looked around theatrically.
One shot from what?
Don't get smart. You, Fennell. You only attended one of my drill classes that I recall, and you were the worst cadet I ever had.
Asher smiled. That makes me obscurely proud.
Good. That's why I'm leaving you out here. Hold this. It was one end of a spool of multiple cables. Stay in touch with us and with the convoy as long as you can. And if we fail, do your best to report back, so that next time they won't make the same mistakes.
Asher seemed lost for words.
Poole stepped up to her. Just observe like you always have, Asher, he said, solemn-faced. All the way back to Larunda, and our dive into the sun. What you always did best. After that, it was down to business. Max walked up to the wall of the Chilly structure and studied the hatch lines. This wasn't a simple nesting, as with the much smaller structure of the mountaintop wormhole Jophiel saw. Rather, a mosaic of varying hatch sizes, some looking large enough to admit a craft the size of the flyer, others more human scale, many lined up along the lower edge. All very practical, even mundane, he thought. But then a hatch was a hatch, no matter how advanced you were. Max reached up with his gloved hand and pressed his palm against the pale blue wall in the middle of one of those lower inscribed hatches. There was no reaction from the structure, no harm done to Max. He turned around and grinned. So much for first contact. Now to open this thing up. He pushed again more firmly. The hatch swung back, on an invisible hinge over his head. More blue light spilled from the interior, reflecting from Max's helmet the folds of his armoured skin suit. Good, I'm still in one piece. And it looks just like before, like the wormhole between the decks, but bigger. Okay, Cinello, you have that step ladder. The little ladder extended to about a metre and a half, so it rested on the lower lip of the open hatch. Itself could not have been a more mundane sight in the circumstances, Jophiel thought. Just like Nicola's ladder at the wormhole in Deck 3. Something about it lifted his spirits. Basic human practicality in the face of mystery. And so far, the mystery was cooperating. Now, Max said, we do like I said, like we rehearsed. We move in two at a time, with the rest hanging back, providing cover if you can, being ready to help us draw back if necessary. The first pair is me and Poole. If we get separated, if anything goes wrong, we rendezvous back here with Asher. Remember, whenever you make a move, always name a fallback rendezvous point first. Got that? He turned to Poole. So, you want to take the first step? You lead. Poole said. You said it. This is a military expedition, not exploration. Max nodded, unsmiling. Here we go, then. After me. He scrambled up the ladder, gripped the doorframe, swung in his legs, and trailing the comms cable, dropped out of sight. Hastily, a little clumsily, Poole scrambled up the ladder and followed him in. That looked awkward, Nicola murmured to Jophiel. We should have practiced with the leaf-spawned ladder. So they should. A detail missed for all Max's apparent thoroughness. Jophiel's sense of dread deepened. Max and Poole looked back out through the hatch, waved at their crewmates, gave thumbs-up gestures. Then they turned and walked deeper into the structure, soon vanishing into the shadows, lost from sight. Nothing to report, Max called back. His voice sounded tight, strained. An empty chamber. Big, though. Just pinging it with my laser. 200 meters on a side, big enough to fill the whole structure. Except that I'm confident it doesn't, Poole said now. There are more ports in the walls, and the roof and floor. Funny geometries in here, I'll bet, just like the wormhole between the decks. Asher, how's the comms working?
The cable is functioning fine. For now, your radio and neutrino links are also working through the open hatchway, and the gravity wave transmitter...
It's gone. Dropped out, looking at the analysis.
Oh.
Oh? Jophiel couldn't see Max's face, but could imagine the glare. What is O? Why don't I like O?
You have Quagma phantoms in there. Just like the bugs that came through the wormhole with the Chile in Jovian orbit.
And brought down the Couchy, Poole said. Leith. I guess they chomped down on the fragment of condensed matter in Max's backpack. We should have anticipated this. Where the Chile goes, the Quagma Phantom seemed to follow. Predictably, we're under attack immediately. So we have to abort. We only came 100 meters and we've already lost one of our comms channels.
Max snapped.
And what? We fly all the way back to the convoy and rig up some other fallback and fly all the way back and try again until something else fails?
He sounded almost panicky to Jofield, but he pressed on. Look, the bugs won't hurt us. Aside from the condensed matter, we brought nothing for them to eat. They'll pass through our bodies like we were virtuals, right?
Right, Poole said. I guess.
Max seemed to pull himself together.
So, we go on. We came a long way for this, and we may not have the resources to mount another try. We do this today or never, he finished flatly.
Nicola touched Jofiel, evoking protocol violation pixel sparks, and spoke on a private line.
I think he means he may not have the resources to try again. He's more scared than we are.
Jofiel frowned. Yeah. Fragile. Yet, he is going on.
She nodded. Give him that.
Max growled. Nasha, you hold the rendezvous point as before. The other three of you, follow us in.
Chapter 72. Once he was inside the structure himself, inside a huge blue box like an abstract cathedral flooded with sourceless light, Jofiel found his unreal heart beating fast. All these years after his own virtual creation, it did him no good to tell himself that in theory he was subject to the least personal danger of any individual here. The walls of Chile technology blocked most human signals, but the equipment carried by each of the team, like all human tech, was embedded with the hardware that projected his existence. Even a few meters of the comms cable they were trailing would do the job. And if all went wrong, he could fall back to stored copies, held by Asher outside the nest, or back in the flyer, even in the convoy 1,000,000 kilometers away. All that logic made no difference. He was here, now, and he felt he was in just as much mortal danger as the rest. Nicola, to her credit, seemed to recognize this. As the rest were staring around at featureless walls, she was gazing at him.
Hey, take it easy.
He looked into her enigmatic face, a mixture of human and ghost he could barely read even now.
Take it easy. I'm scared, Nicola.
I know you are. I know some people think that virtuals are immune to such feelings.
Of course you're scared. You have a right to be. You are alive, whatever your physical form. You have lived as long as your oldest memory.
You see, I've had time to think this over.
You're scared because you are alive, not because you're crazy.
She glanced over her shoulder.
Though I'm not so sure about our crewmates. Cinello is grinning. Come on.
Max, for better or worse, was making quick decisions. Now, without further talk, he pushed open another hatch. In the wall opposite the one the five of them had entered through, Jofiel, approaching, could see nothing of what lay beyond. Nothing but an elusive darkness. As if his gaze slid from one side of the open hatchway to the other, without taking in the intervening space.
Max said, "We go through, to the next room."
"We're in the third room," Poole murmured, counting the exterior as the first room. "Here we are in the second room, which might not occupy the same space as the first room, you see." And of course, that next hatch was the first impossible doorway, Jofiel realized. If this structure was as simple as it looked outside, that door ought to have opened up to the exterior, to the wheel, its relativistic sky. Instead, another room. Room 3, where no room ought to be. The others didn't seem to have noticed, or, he thought, glancing at Nicola and Poole, if they had,
They weren't remarking on it. Good policy, he decided.
Let's go on, he said.
Fine, Max snapped, edgy now. All five go on to the third room. We can see back through the second to Asher out there, and she can see us, so a sentry would be wasted here. We don't know how extensive this structure is going to be. Same arrangement as before. Michael and I will lead. You three cover us and prepare to retrieve if necessary. Let's go.
Poole first this time, Max following. They disappeared through that enigmatic hatch into darkness.
Cinello, Nicola, Jophiel hang back. Jophiel was aware of Asher outside, watching anxiously. After a few heartbeats, Nicola called,
Michael? Max, are you okay in there?
I... Poole's voice. Come through. They glanced at each other. Then Nicola climbed through, followed by Cinello.
Jophiel was the last. And he climbed through a mundane hole in the wall into... twisted horror. At first he could make no sense of the shapes he saw, the patches of colour that slid through his field of view, the lack of clear edges, no absence of any sense of relative positions, distances. When he turned his head, the scene seemed to swim around him, as if projected from his own eyes, and yet not quite. As if the very act of his turning caused the space around him to distort. There was no roof above, just what looked like the interior of a pyramid of four, five, six sides. The number was meaningless. The order of it changed as he tried to count his way around. The floor underneath his feet, though it felt as flat as that of the second room had been, rippled in his field of view, slowly like viscous oil. And on that shifting surface stood Max, standing straight but at an odd, oblique angle. He determinedly closed his eyes. He dropped his head. When he looked again, it was at his own body. Trying to ignore the background under his feet, he concentrated on finding the virtual comms cable that trailed from his own waist. There it was, a silver line of human artifice snaking back through the chaos. And he followed other cables and found Cinello, and then Nicola, her bulk unmistakable. They stood as still as he was, upright, apparently calm, and yet at angles as if in a tipped gravity field. Stiff toys roughly scattered.
It's like Garlia 3, Michael Poole said.
Nicola's voice sounded faint.
What? What did you say?
Orlarunda. A spinning habitat. Think about it. Where gravity doesn't just point down, but at odd angles. Where the sky is a grassy field above your head. Think, Nicola. Imagine if you dropped a few of the grassland runners from High Africa into a place like Garlia. Wouldn't they be baffled, scared? We could understand the logic, figure it out, but...
But not this, Jophiel said. An artifact beyond our comprehension.
A kind of snow seemed to be coalescing around him now. Not falling from any sky, not condensing like a mist, but big... soggy flakes just appearing as if blowing around some invisible corner.
That's all this is, Michael Poole said, determined, dogged, an artifact. We know the Chile is a relic of a different age, when the universe was very young, when space-time itself was chaotic. Maybe this is some reflection of how it sees the world, a mixture of our perceptions and its own. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. Listen, we knew... it would be like this, didn't we? Even the wormhole between the decks was folded. But our instruments still work. Things still make sense. In the end, it's just another big room. And we can walk to the far side. Max? Max, you agree? There was no reply from Max. It was hard even to see him in the chaos. A glance at Jophiel's wrist screen showed that the man was still breathing, if raggedly, heart pumping, but too fast. Poole said,
"Leith. I didn't pay him enough attention. Look, Max, close your eyes if you have to. Stay still, and I'll come to get you."
"No," Cinello said, sounding calm. Unimpressed, even, Jophiel thought. "I'm closer, Michael, and I'm behind him. I can see him. I'll fetch him and bring him to you."
After she had brought him back, they gathered around a silent, stiff Max Ward. Huddled for human companionship, comfort. After a quick conference, they decided to go on, at least one more chamber. And by common consent, despite Max's feeble protests, they decided not to leave a sentry in the twisted-up space of the third room. So they advanced, together, holding gloved hands, save Jophiel, human beings helping each other creep through twisting, distorted strangeness, one step at a time, until they reached the hatch on the far wall. All five clambered through. Max moved without a murmur, obeying simple orders, responding when gently pushed or pulled. And in the next room, Jophiel found himself staring at the great attractor. This fourth room at least seemed conventional, as far as its floor, ceiling, and three of its walls were concerned, just that ubiquitous sky-blue surface, engraved with the usual marks of hatches nested in their different sizes. But the fourth wall, open space, a curtain of stars, a magnificent diorama 200 meters across, almost overwhelming. And there, hanging in space, a loop, a thing of lines and curves. The viewpoint was positioned somewhere above the plane of the loop. The near side of the construct formed a tangled, impenetrable fence, twisted exuberantly, with shards of light glittering through the morass. Light distorted by space-time defects, perhaps, Jophiel thought. The far side of the object was visible as a pale, braided band, remote across the sky. The rough disk of space enclosed by the artifact seemed virtually clear, save, Jophiel saw as he looked more carefully, for a single glowing point of light right at the geometric centre of the loop. They all must have known immediately what this was, Jophiel reflected. They had all studied Asher's blurred, edge-of-resolution images of this, the great attractor, the Chile ring. And that great pinpoint was a doorway to another universe, if Asher and the ghosts were right. Nicola murmured, "A sense of perspective."
"What?"
"What we need above all in this universe, especially you, Pools. And just to give you a sense of perspective," she pointed off to the right of the image, "my ghost eyes are better than yours. See that blur?" Jophiel frowned, staring. He gave in to the rare temptation to enhance his vision, to use his virtual eye zoom feature. His eyes itched as he stared. Nicola's blur, a mere detail on the image wall, was a handsome spiral.
"That's a galaxy," he murmured. "A whole galaxy as big as ours, maybe, that we just took 25,000 years to cross, and it's dwarfed by this ring, this single object.
A damaged galaxy, too. Its structure seemed broken, one spiral arm twisting out like a tail. Perhaps it had been distorted by the gravity field of the immense object nearby.
And look further."
Poole pointed at more distant stars. Jophiel imagined they must be brilliant supergiants to be individually visible across such distances. "The stars on the far side of the ring, the galaxies, I think their light is tinged blue. Blue shifted, But it would be, wouldn't it? This is the great attractor. The place all the stars are falling into, where all the light is falling. And at the heart of it, the Chile artifact. It is wonderful, Chinello said, and horrible. Nicola said, whatever it is, it's 150 million light-years away from our galaxy, yet we see it. How? This whole Chile structure is about folded space-time, isn't it? And I guess we are looking across one leaf-spawned monster of a fold. She held up a silver hand, reached out. I wonder what would happen if you tried to walk through this wall.
I wouldn't advise it, Michael Poole said.
Why not? Chinello said. It looks so real.
I know. I suspect it is real in some sense, Poole said. A true image of the artifact, not some simulation. Given that to ask what is true, what is real, what is there now, is only going to produce unsatisfactory answers across intervals of millions of light years. But I don't think this is another Chile transit system, another super wormhole. I think this is some kind of viewer, like a light pipe, maybe. The Chile can see where its fellows are, has been able to watch the construction of this ring, obviously useful, but it can only get there using its faster-than-light drive when the construction is done.
Right, Jophiel said. Otherwise it would have gone through by now. I guess their wormhole technology has its limits. If this is just a pretty picture, Chinello said, we should copy it back to Asher and move on. We haven't found what we came for, not yet.
Agreed, Poole said. He glanced around at his team. Jophiel and Nicola nodded their acceptance. Jophiel was impressed by Chinello's briskness. Max, though, just stared at the light show. When Poole touched his shoulder, he seemed to come back to himself with a start. He looked at Poole, glanced at the others, and walked off curtly to the far wall of the chamber, the next hatch. Jophiel and Nicola shared a concerned glance. Another hatch, easily pushed open, the step ladder unfolded once more. They stepped into another room of twisted space, just as baffling and incomprehensible as the third room had been. But Chinello stared at the floor, the walls.
I think there's something in here with us.
They all froze. Poole glared around. Not Quagma Phantoms.
No. Something bigger. More ordinary looking. There!
She pointed sharply. Jophiel saw it. A couple of creatures, if creatures they were, fist-sized, scurrying across the floor and out of sight in the chaos, a blur of legs. And Chinello said softly,
Look! Look at me!
When Jophiel glanced over, he saw that one of the beetles was climbing up her arms as if inquisitive. It was insect-like, about the size of Chinello's hand, with a smooth black carapace. It looked like an Anthropocene-era artillery shell, Jophiel thought, a museum piece cut in half.
I can't tell how it's moving, Chinello said. I don't think it has legs like a regular insect. I can't feel any legs through my suit. I can feel like rippling.
Cautiously she turned her arm over. The beetle clung on, apparently unperturbed.
I think you're safe enough, Poole said cautiously.
If they were going to do us or our stuff any harm, like the Quagma Phantoms, they'd have done it as soon as we walked through the hatch. Take care, though. Now a beetle approached Max, scurrying over the floor. Max seemed to recoil. He actually staggered backwards, calling out, until Chinello, following close behind, caught him.
Private line, Nicola muttered now, to you two Pools. I knew it. I knew this guy would crack up. A quarter century of marching and drilling and posturing, and now this.
Jophiel murmured,
We were expecting conflict. Max knows conflict. He fought a human war and won. He's been able to cope as we've progressed to this point, one long